Time now to go to Sunday school with the professor.
Take it easy, will you?
Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lawrence.
Oh, I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Good answer. Like the way you think.
KNBR 680, the sports leader. Brought to you by River Islands, one of the country's top-selling master-planned communities just across the Altamont in Lathrop. Where else can you live on a lake, next door to a park, or walking distance to your kid's new school? With 10 new neighborhoods, River Islands is the one place you can't afford to miss.
All right. The professor is here. Well, how are you? Good morning.
Marty, I'm well. It's good to be back. It's good to see Allie and Carmen here this morning. It's been a long winter, and happy to be back doing it again.
Yeah, here we are in game three of the homestand, and let's just jump into it right away, and that is something unusual. Of course, seeing the opener. And I was looking forward to it. Have you ever seen it before? Have you ever done a game with an opener before?
Not the way they do it. I mean, we've had, you know, forced openers. The starter, you know, something happens. And remember Chad Zerbe, great game he pitched. Our starter, something happened right before while he was warming up, and he hurt himself. And we had to find Chad Zerbe and say, you're starting a game. And he was in a big rush to get ready. He went down to the bullpen, barely had time to get ready. And I think he threw like six shutout innings and had a great start. But no, I haven't been involved with it like that. We've seen it obviously, and we've seen, you know, guys go short starts, but not the planned opener. So it is a little bit different to prepare for the planned opener. We're guessing who's going to follow the starter. So that was a big question. Was it Chirinos? Was it the left Yarborough? Would it be the lefty? So you have to prepare for a few different pitchers in that regard.
Yeah, and it, for me, I thought it's a lot of gamesmanship here. You know, I really, with Tampa Bay, you know, here it is. Stanek throws, you know, his first two innings, he throws a bunch of pitches about 58 feet. The guy was just winging it yesterday, but he gets through two innings and does what they want him to do. And after the first inning, I'm looking, well, where's Chirinos?
Right.
And there's two lefties. What did you think at that point?
Well, when I saw the two lefties up, I was wondering, you know, why they had two guys up going, you know, in the bottom of that inning, or the bottom of the inning. And then it dawned on me, the pitcher spot was coming up. And as you saw, they pinch hit in the third inning after their opener got out of the game. So they had the two lefties up for a reason. If they didn't get to the pitcher's spot, they probably would have brought one of the lefties in to get out of the inning, then pinch hit, and then bring the following pitcher in. So that's why they had the two guys up. But it's an odd thing. You know, I'm trying to wrap my head around all the pluses and minuses of this opener and been asking questions with people here and there because, you know, you have your own initial thoughts. But in the National League, it really is one thing that really stood out to me is they used every player they had pinch hitting in the third inning. You know, with our bench, I don't want to pinch hit in a National League game in the third inning. I want to save my bullets for when the game's on the line. And so they're firing their bullets in that National League game throughout. And if you have everyday players that you don't pinch hit for late in the game, but I think you can run into some real problems in the National League when you start using your pinch hitters that early in the game, you run out of players.
Somebody gave a stat that they use it for their fourth and fifth starters because they have Snell, they've got Morton, and Glasnow, who are three guys who can, you know, take you deep in the game. So, Carmen, was it yesterday? Someone gave the stat like 44 and 34 when the fourth and fifth starters would pitch when they use the opener. So I thought that's pretty good. I'd take that any day for your fourth and fifth starter, wouldn't you?
Yeah, a couple of things. I think that, you know, in theory, you know, a lot of things make sense statistically. You know, you don't want, you know, your starter to face the middle of the order for the third time, so they're trying to extend that out. If you have an opener now, you know, he may go through the fifth or into the sixth, but he doesn't have to face those three. But there's minuses to it as well. That guy that started the game yesterday, he was filthy.
Yeah.
And the thing that stands out, they have a lot of good arms over there in Tampa Bay. You know, if that guy's throwing 98 with that type of split, if he was in our club, he'd be pitching late in the game, eighth or ninth inning. But they got other guys that can do the same thing.
Yeah.
So they're that deep that they can do that and get away with it. I mean, they have a lot of good arms. in that bullpen. The other thing that I can't wrap my head around really is, you know, how you maintain this through a season, because, you know, you use the opener, you have a lot of guys going long amount of innings, and if you get knocked around a little bit, they got to have a shuttle where they can send guys to the minor leagues and bring fresh arms in, because we don't manage a game like that, right? You have your starters, and you know if your starter only goes three or four, you know your bullpen's going to get taxed. Yeah. So it's a whole different management style of the game, and they got a lot of good arms, and you know they've done a good job with it with the arms that they have.
Boy, very interesting. I found it very interesting. Well, you knocked them out. Because they're giving you Chirinos today, I guess. I assume you're getting Chirinos today.
Well, yeah, we are. We were told we're getting him. You know, I don't know whether we knocked him out or not. I mean,
they opener out.
Well, he went two innings.
Well, I mean, you knocked the concept out.
The concept, but we won the game.
Yes.
Yeah, we won the game. Thank you. Okay. that makes sense. Yeah. So let's do it again today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. The professor is here. Always great to talk ball with you on a Sunday morning. Kevin Pillar. Carmen, what do you think of Kevin Pillar?
I think he's all right. Like, I mean, I think he's great from what we've seen, but I would like to see more and more consistency, obviously, as he continues to develop here.
Yeah, I like him.
You like him?
No kidding. You've been nonstop Kevin Pillar for 24 hours.
I like what he brings to the table, and he did something yesterday. Look, he's an igniter, and you don't have many guys who ignite like that. And as I said, Flan picked up my phrase, he's not a flatliner.
Right.
You know, things are happening with this guy. And, I mean, a push bunt to get it going, then a stolen base. The throw was in center field. He wasn't waiting around.
Right.
He was coming to see you.
Right.
And then, of course, he scores on a sacrifice fly.
Right. Well, the first thing I've learned is you never want to get involved and get between a family spat, so I'm not going to pick a side here, but that's a joke, obviously.
I heard you.
Yeah, you're right, though, Marnie. There's a lot of good things. One, I mean, this guy's a proven major leaguer, you know, and it's a huge upgrade for us. He's done it. He's been a major league player for a long time. He brings energy, as you mentioned, which we got a lot of guys that do that now. Not just Pablo is very energetic. Solarte is another guy that loves to play the game, is out there working. And it's great to have players that want to get better, that love to play the game and bring that energy, as he ignited us yesterday in that push bunt. You know, those are the things we need to do in this ballpark. We need to create runs. We're not going to pound the ball and hit the ball over the fence, you know, with nine guys in the lineup. So he knows who he is and what he can do, and that got us going. He went there and we sold a base. He got the third base, as you said. So, you know, you need some balance in that lineup. We all love the home run, but you need guys that can do other things, the guys that can put the ball in play, guys that can hit the long ball, guys that are willing to take the bunt and keep the line moving. So a great addition for us. He brings a lot of energy. I'm looking forward to seeing him play every day.
Well, I'm glad you took my side. Thank you very much.
You weren't supposed to say that, Martin.
Thank you very much. A push bunt. Let's go with the professor a little bit. I tried to explain it on the post-game show yesterday. But a push bunt is different than a drag bunt that a lefty would do to try to get it past the pitcher. Explain the push bunt.
Well, the push bunt, you go to the opposite side. So if you're right-handed, you're pushing towards, second base, first to second base. You're trying to hit the seam between the second baseman and the first baseman. And the thing about the push bunt is if you know you can beat the pitcher to first base, mm-hmm. you know, it's you see it more with a left-handed hitter up. And then it would be called a drag because he's taking it with him. But if he takes it to the first baseman and a left-handed pitcher falls off towards third base and he can't regroup and get to first before the batter, you know, the batter runner. So the only way to defend it is if the second baseman is in position to get to first. If you're a fast lefty and a lefty as I'm on, you can drag that ball with you to the first baseman and you're beating a pitcher. So long as it's far enough away from the bag, it can't be defended unless you put the second baseman in position to do that. So I brought that up because with the right-handed push bunt, he's a righty, he's fast enough. If that second baseman's playing him way up the middle, almost into a shift, all he has to do is push that ball way off the line, and he's quick enough where he feels he could beat the pitcher to first base, they're not going to get him either because the second baseman's out of the play. So you got to look where the second baseman's playing a lot of times when you drag bunt or you push bunt in these situations.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I
good
thought
play.
It was great. And then, well, you jammed a couple in there yesterday. Connor Joe got his first major league hit. And he scored on that. And Doug, first of all, Duggar. We'll talk about Duggar in a minute. But Duggar's playing great. Just rips one down the line, and Joe's on first, and you jammed him in there.
Yeah. No, well, you know what? We were fortunate yesterday. I think the sack fly, Pilar scoring with Kiermaier. Look, this guy's got one of the best arms in the game, and he's supposed to be above average in his accuracy. And you can watch all the video you want. You know, you try to prepare, you watch these guys throw, they have a reputation, you get the info from the scouts and from our analytics, you know, the percentage, his arm strength percentage in the league, and you look at all that, but you're still at the mercy of the moment in the game. And if he got off one of his normal good throws, Pilar would have probably been out, but we had one out, and we're not going to wait for a two-out hit there. He has speed. We were going to make him throw him out, and he went, and for us, he threw the ball up the line, and it wasn't his normal, you know, cannon accurate throw, and we got the run. So, you know, I just mentioned that because coaching third, you know, Flan and all the third base, sometimes you can make the best decision in the world, and you're at the mercy of the moment of the throw. Right. Conversely, you hold a guy and the guy throws a terrible throw. Right. It's awful. He bounces a 15 hopper and then everybody's booing. So, you know, that's why the human element, and you have to play the game and be ready for the moment. So, but Joe moves good. It was nice to see him get that hit. Hopefully he'll relax a little bit now and the hits will start falling for him. But that was a tougher decision with nobody out to keep him going. You know, Lord knows you don't want to get anybody thrown out with nobody out. But where he was at and where the ball was, I just felt he was going to make it. Yeah. So it worked out.
Yeah, you got him in there and Pilar, of course, on the sack fly. And those are the key runs to put the team up. And the converse, Parra in left field. Now, well, you know, I love spring training. You know that. I love to be out there. We're out there at 8 o'clock in the morning. I can't wait for infield and outfield just to stand there and watch the arms, watch the speed of the arms. And I remember talking to you early in spring training. I said, gee, Parra, there's no rainbows here.
No.
This guy throws a laser,
yes,
right?
Yes, he does, right.
And here he was in left field, and he's got a shot to throw a guy out at the plate. And I said, verbally, I said, he's got him.
Right.
And as you just described, the throw is a little bit off to the side, and they didn't get him.
Yeah. You know, there's a guy, for me, he's the most dangerous outfield arm in the league. There's nobody better. I mean, now that I've had a chance to watch him every day, he's just unbelievable. As you mentioned, watch him take an infield. He one-hops that throw perfectly every time he throws a ball. And then when he's close enough, he throws it on a line all the way in the air. You can hang the wash on it. So... you know, that was uncharacteristic of him. He still made a good throw, but not one of his normal great throws. This guy is above average. And that's why, you take chances at third in certain situations, and you make people throw you out. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, that one, I verbally said, they got him.
Yeah.
You know, because he had just rounded the bag, and there's Parra in middle left field.
Right.
And I said, here it comes.
Yep.
And it was just off to the side, so that was that. Panic had an interesting play this week against the Dodgers, where into the shift, he played deep, which he should be, and I think it was Bellinger, I forget, hit one, and I think Joe, even after the game, said, wait, I better be a little bit more careful on a ground ball with a guy like that running, because he is in short right field.
Yeah, well, he knows it, and, we talked about it, but he already knows. He's played the game long enough, and, you know, there's a couple elements that come into play with this is the field. San Diego's a fast field. L.A. is a fast field. And you see, a lot of times we won't put him out on the grass with certain guys that can really run, especially in our ballpark. The grass is a little bit slower. It can be damp. It can be wet. And you get too far out there in right field with these guys that can run, and they hit one that's not, you know, hit hard, and you have a tough time making the play. And he hustled. I got to give Bellinger a lot of credit. I mean, that ball wasn't real slow, but he hustled his butt off to get there, and that's why you do it. And I have to say, you know, Bellinger, came up as a first baseman. And, you know, I was talking to Justin Turner one day. The first time I saw Bellinger play center field, I knew he can run, right? We've seen him hit. We've seen him run. And I said, really, Bellinger in center field? And he goes, oh, yeah. I go, is he that fast? And he goes, he's our fastest guy in the club.
Wow.
And they had a lot of speed on that team. And, you know, that blew me away. So sometimes you really don't know just how quick a guy is, even though we played against him, until something like that occurs. And you go, oh, my goodness, see, this guy can flat out fly. Well, and he hustles. So.
Yeah, he did. That was a big play. And it's a learning curve, obviously. You learn that, and you play him differently. Panic made a play up the middle. Where he cut a ball off and got an off-balance throw into the plate to Kratz, and almost got him at the plate. And, you know, I thought of, and I know this is kind of crazy, and I wonder if you've ever seen it, but I thought in a way if Panic threw it to Crawford, and made the throw to the plate, but I know in the moment you don't really think like that. Ever see a play like that?
Yeah, no, I've seen it. You see it sometimes when the second baseman is going up the middle on the dirt. You know, Joe was in the outfield.
Right.
He was in a shift, and that's an extremely difficult play to make. Anything to your backhand when you're in the shift, because you have to go so far, and now you're so deep. But, yeah, you see it when a second baseman's on the dirt. I've seen many times where he backhands in the ball, and the shortstop's right there. Instead of trying to, he'll flip it to the shortstop, and he'll throw. You're exactly right. We've seen that play quite a bit. But I don't think Craw was close enough for him to do it, and I thought – Joe, you know, he made a good throw. It's just a little bit offline. Another foot, you know, towards home plate, and he would have been out. And the thing about it is these shifts do put you in uncomfortable positions. And an infielder has made that throw, you know, on the dirt once in a while, but not out in the outfield.
Yeah.
So these plays come up that you don't have a lot of reps of doing it. You know, you're an athlete. You can throw the ball accurate, but it's a tough play. Your momentum's taking you left field. You got to throw across your body to home plate. And difficult play. Barely had him out. So, I mean, we barely had him, you know, merely had him. So
I was amazed it was that close.
Yeah, that
was a heck of a play. So I said, yeah, flip it to Craw. Let Craw, you know, do his pirouette.
Yeah.
And throw a strike.
Yeah, he would have to do a pirouette because he's going that way.
Exactly.
And he'd probably do a full circle turn and then fire. So.
They would have had him. I'm telling you, Crawford would have loved it. You know, because you know he fools around, not fools around, but right. Does all these crazy plays in practice.
Yeah, no, he practices a lot of things like that. Yeah.
Very good. Hey, Belt had a heck of a game yesterday.
Yes, he did.
How about defensively? I mean, you were here for JT Snow, and you've seen JT. He made a play in the hole.
Yeah.
What I thought was maybe one of the best plays I've seen him make.
Yeah, well, he dove for the ball, which is great. You know, that's one thing he's been trying to be better at. And that's what I appreciate about him. He's trying to get better, and he is getting better. His whole game, you know, he's hitting, his defense. He takes a lot of pride in playing off the line as far as he does.
It's almost like having another second baseman.
Well, that's why his zone ratings are so high. He's always near the top of the league. He gets the balls that other first basemen don't get to because he has the ability to do that. And it's not easy because you have to bust your tail to first base. When you're playing that far off the line. And sometimes it can get you in a bind, you know, like that ball to Solarte in San Diego. Yeah. Solarte hadn't played but 10 innings of shortstop. Belt was way off the line when the routine ground ball to short. Solarte looked up, and Belt wasn't standing at the bag yet, and he kind of lobbed it over there, and he ended up getting an error. That was one of those things that just because he hadn't played with him. And, you know, as an infielder, you know, sometimes you got to take another step or wait just a little bit because he plays so far off the line. So we're always trying to keep an eye on that. But it's hard to do. It's hard to do what Belt does and to be that good at it.
I'm telling you, I can't remember another first baseman that played that far off the line. Keith Hernandez, I'm thinking about, or people like that.
Well, they didn't do it years ago.
Okay.
You know, that's kind of come into play the last 8 or 9 years, you know, with the positioning and I don't want to say the analytics, but, you know, there's a lot of theories. Well, not a lot of theories. The theory is more balls are hit in that, you know, between first and second than they are down the line with a right-handed hitter. And especially in the major leagues, most of your hitters are big hitters. How many guys hit the ball down the first base line as a right-handed hitter? So you want to play as far as you possibly can and still get to the base on a throw. And he moves pretty good, and he makes himself uncomfortable. As I said, it's not that easy to do, because now on a routine ground ball, you got to really hustle to get the first, and sometimes you get there late, the ball's on the way, and it can affect your ability on picking a ball. So, yeah, I give him a lot of credit for doing
that.
Yeah,
very good. Boy, the perfect. You're cooking. This is we're in school this morning. Very good.
All right. Well, first day back. First day, we got the whole gang here.
Charmin Alley, what do you think? First day back, is he in his game here?
Yeah, he hasn't missed anything that you've lobbed his way.
Mid-season form.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go, Elliot. You could say it now. I turned you up.
Oh, thanks. I just said mid-season form.
Very good.
Continue.
All right. Yeah, well, you're in there. You're hanging. All right. Let's go to the lighter side a little bit. This is the 30th anniversary of the movie Major League.
Wow.
And, of course, there was a nice article in ESPN about it. You know, the owner wanted to tank. The team was tanking, you know, 30 years ago. Whoever heard of that? Today, we hear this all the time. But it was really a good movie. It was a fun movie. You like Major League?
Yeah, I loved it. I laughed, you know, like crazy when I saw it. You know, back I was, you know, just removed from playing and a lot of the nuances. They had Jabu and all the stuff they did in that movie. Willie Mays Hayes, you know, running the bases. And it's a great movie to watch with your kids. You know, my great-nephew saw it for the first time, and he absolutely loved it. You know, when you're a little leaguer and you're at that age, and it's a fun family movie, and I liked it. It was one of my all-time favorites.
I like the manager.
Yeah.
You know, Lou Brown.
Yeah.
Win a game. You win the next game, it's a winning streak.
That's right.
The ref plays that all the time when you win a game.
Right. Oh, he does.
Yeah, he plays it all the time.
Yeah.
I love the clip.
Yeah.
I love the clip. You got a favorite baseball movie, one that you like?
Well, the ones that stand out. I mean, that's at the top. The Natural, I don't know why I took to it so much, but I played in Buffalo, New York. I played in that stadium.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it War Memorial Stadium?
War Memorial Stadium in Buffalo, New York. And nobody would be there. You know, we'd drive our cars up, down the ramp and into the stadium. You'd park underneath the stadium. And, you know, we had this grand old stadium where the Juice, O.J., used to run and play football. And no one would come to the games, right? It was like when I played for the Hawaii Islanders. We played at Aloha Stadium, this huge stadium, and you'd have about 4,000 fans. But it was our own little ballpark, and I enjoyed my time in Buffalo. So that was at the top of the list. I enjoyed watching that movie, and it had that old-time ballpark feel. You know, it really did.
Yeah.
That ballpark was special in a lot of ways for that. It was a time, you know, a time gone that we played in Double A. It was different than everywhere else. The Field of Dreams. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think everybody loved the Field of Dreams. You know, Kevin Costner, a great actor, and that was very suspenseful. You didn't know what was going to happen next. That's why I like that one. A little suspense to that movie.
Baseball, Roy. Baseball.
That's right.
James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
Baseball. Yeah. Corn never was the same to me after that movie. Watching the cornfield.
You kept waiting for players to walk out.
Really, I'm still waiting for players to come. They, you know, people go to that field.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
You know, we had someone on in spring training. I forget who it was, who actually would go to the field as a kid and see it and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a destination. I mean, I get that. I mean, well, you know, you see a lot of corn, but how often you see a baseball field in a in
there.
A cornfield? Yeah,
yeah,
it's there. Yeah.
Boy, amazing. Boy, interesting beginning of a season, and we'll talk about that. We'll take a break. Ron Wotus with us, of course, the professor. Interesting beginning of a season, the good and the bad of starting a season, and we'll talk about some of that stuff when we come back right after this.
Talking baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
All right, you guys, let's listen up. We won a game yesterday. If we win one today, that's two in a row. We win one tomorrow, that's called a winning streak. It has happened before. So let's see some hustle. Let's jack it up a little. I got a feeling things are about to turn around for us.
2-1 pitch. Swing, and there's a high drive in the deep left center. Pham is going back at the warning track. Hit the wall. Adios. He worked out. A two-run opposite field home run for Brandon Belt. And it's an explosion for the Giants here in the fifth inning. It's a four-run inning, and the Giants lead 6-3.
This is Brandon Bell of the San Francisco Giants. Now back to the Giants pregame show with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680.
Boy, John could be in the movie. You know that? The Lou Brown, you know, the winning streak, John sort of got into the spirit of it.
Absolutely, yeah. I like it.
Don't you love that clip by the manager?
Well, there's a lot of those moments in that movie that make you smile or laugh, and that's why it was such a popular movie.
Yeah. I love it. I love hearing it. Hey, well, River Islands, we've talked a lot about that. You and I have been out there. I've been talking about it the whole month. And what gets me, you know, and, you know, Lori is in real estate.
Right.
And, you know, we know the prices of homes in the core Bay Area. And where River Islands is, it's an easy commute, of course, to Silicon Valley, but back into the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And you're in the beginning of something, you know, the 30 model homes and 3 bedrooms to 7 bedrooms. It really is a jewel in the Bay Area.
Yeah, I was surprised how easy the commute was, you know, when I went out there, how close it was. You know, a lot of people commute from Tracy, right? They commute from out in that area here at the ballpark. I know many people that live out there and they commute in. And that's a brand new community with brand new homes and all the waterways and all the amenities that they have over there. So it's a great option. And I know that opening day of the ballpark, we talked about it last time, is coming up here soon. And I don't know what events they have planned, but I'm going to check into that and see what they have going on for that opening. That'd be neat to see.
Yeah, riverislands.com. And the other thing is, and again, the more I talk about it and think about it and being out there, if you live out there, you know, we love recreation in Northern California. And whether it's going up to the Gold Country, going to Yosemite, going to Tahoe, wherever you go, you're right there. And I always say, if you're in San Francisco, you want to go to Fisherman's Wharf, North Beach and all that, you're right here to do it. Well, when you're there at River Islands, you're in the middle of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, you are. You're close to Livermore and all the places that you mentioned. I mean, everybody loves Yosemite. I haven't been there, and I don't know. It's been 15 years. I need to go back.
Really?
Maybe I need to get a place at River Islands so I can shoot over there.
God, we can get a deal, I'm sure.
Yeah. We'll look into that.
Carmen's making a face.
Huh? Yeah.
What are you making a face for?
I'm just imagining you guys as, like, roommates and what that would be like.
Bocce ball, eight days a week. Right. I mean, you and I, Marty.
Here we are. We're out there. But I like it. It's good. Yeah, you got to go to Yosemite. Of course, Aaron is up there at Camp Tawanga. You know, he does the whole food service for Camp Tawanga. He'll be going up there at the end of April and come back in October.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it's beautiful. It's a beautiful part of the country.
Yeah, it really is.
Beautiful part. Hey, one thing I want to let Allie and Carmen ask something, but something that grabbed me yesterday. I was sitting out there in the ninth inning, as I like to do. We did the show in the bunker yesterday, which I love doing with Carmen and Allie when Allie's here. But I looked at the defense, and there was Belt. There was Panic, Crawford, Longoria. You had your outfield, Posey, and you had Smith on the hill. No substitutions, and there's your defense.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of our strengths is that infield defense, and now with Duggar and Pilar and Parra,
come on,
in the outfield, you know, well, we have a machine gun out there in left field to throw people out, and we have 2 speedsters, one in center, one in right. Those guys are interchangeable. It's nice, especially in this ballpark. I mean, that's how we play here. We typically play close games. That's how we've won here over the years, you know. Do something to win the close game. And when you have speed and can cover the field and you don't beat yourself, you always have a chance in that game. So, yeah, I know it's great to see.
Yeah, I loved it. I said, boy, that's like the end of a World Series or something like that. And your 9 guys are out there. You didn't have to put defensive replacements. I think it's huge.
It is. I mean, you don't want to do that. You know, I remember there was years, many years, we'd take out 2 outfielders when Felipe was here. I think we had Moises Alou, and I can't remember the other outfielder, but we'd actually trade out 2 outfielders with a lead late in the game just to strengthen our defense. And of course, Mo was a good outfielder, you know, Alou, he was a very good outfielder, but he was older, and I think he had a foot issue going on or something like that. But that, you know, that limits your moves in the game. I mean, you know, all 25 guys are so important in a ball game, because if you have a weakness or you have to use a guy for defense and then they tie the game, They tied the game, and now you lost a move to try to score a run. So it's nice to have players that can play both sides of the ball. They can play defense, and they bring something offensively, and it's a much easier game to manage.
That was great. That was great. Go ahead, Carmen.
Oh, so this is completely unrelated to that, but I wanted to talk about the beer shower I saw, you know, documentation of on the internet that was happening to Bergen and Joe. Usually you just see some Budweiser in there, but I saw milk. I saw Old Spice, body wash. What's happening? Is that normal?
Well, I got to tell you, our clubhouse staff, they have everything in there for us. They load that place down. And no, you're right. Typically it's beer. But anything they get their hands on, you know, if they really want to, and they had time to think about this. I mean, everybody's waiting for this guy to get his first hit, and Bergie's first win is always a big thing, and you knew it was going to happen. So I've seen that before, mostly on the dead man lift where they get the rookie, right? They get two guys on the ground, and they bet him that he can lift the other two guys off the ground or he can get away from them. I can't remember the detail on it. And they lay down, they lock arms, and when they get the rookie in the middle and these two guys, he's got his arms locked. Here comes the whole team with mustard, ketchup, allspice, whatever you can find, food, whipped cream, throwing everything on them. So nothing is off limits in a celebration. And, you know, I knew it was going to, well, we all knew it was going to happen, but I was going in the coach's room and I saw Will Smith. He's got the big cart. Right? He's got the big cart and he's going into the kitchen to get all the items. So it's fun. These guys, it's nice to see them celebrate the big moments for their teammates.
Yeah, I thought I'd see some sriracha or something in there, but, you know, maybe next time.
Maybe, yeah. No, that's a good one, sriracha. Yeah. Maybe they'll do it now that you mentioned it.
How about the priest wines? We could bring some of that.
Oh, here
we
go.
You know, I had that last night, Marty.
Here we go.
I had it last night, the double barrel, the 50% Malbec and Syrah. It was very, very good.
Yeah,
very
we've
good.
Been talking about it. If you go up to Yountville, to the tasting room, and say my name, Marty Lurie, two free tastings.
Really?
At the Priest Ranch tasting room.
I'm going the next chance I get.
Yeah, that segue, by the way, was
good segue.
A++.
Come on.
Didn't see that one coming.
Whoa, you're part of the team here. All right, Allie, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, just going kind of off of that, it's fun to watch the firsts for these players, first wins, first hits, and that all kind of tends to come in the beginning of the season. So with all of... I mean, there's good and bad to starting a new season. I'd imagine you start off fresh, but you hope that you get off to a good start. Otherwise, you've got to turn it around. So what are some of the good and bad that you find in the beginning of the season?
Yeah, well, it's true. I mean, everybody wants to get off to a good start. You know, first you want to leave spring training healthy and in shape, and we accomplished that this year, so that was big. You always want to get off to a good start, but, you know, people say, well, if you lose games in April, it could cost you the pennant. That's true, but the games in April, in my opinion, still are not as important as the games, you know, after the trading deadline. I've been on many good teams where we get off to a bad start, or we're just muddling along, a veteran team, and then once the trading deadline hits and it's time to turn it up a notch, not that you can turn it on and off, but these veteran players know when they need to perform, and so the end of the season is much more important. But having said that, everybody wants to get off to a good start, so I think, you know, the good thing is, even if you don't get off to the start that you want, you can make these games up very easily. And if you get off to a great start, you know what? There's a lot of baseball left. We've seen that as well. So, you know, those are the things that really stand out. You know, healthy, and the season's so long that you just want players to be healthy and be in shape and, you know, take it a day at a time.
How often do you look back towards the end of the season? You look back at the beginning of the year, either good or bad, you know, if you win the division by just a couple games or you lose it by a couple, how often do you go back to those early games and think of a close one?
Yeah, you know what? I don't. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of other people do in the game. But when you're on the field and you're in the moment and you're doing these things, I remember games that are more recent to the end of the season that costs you. Because right now we could be, you know, we could be 12-0, and we have what, 5 months of baseball left. That can be erased. It doesn't matter. It's just begun. Yeah, that's it, right?
Yeah. Look at the Braves, the Brewers. They got off to great starts and didn't win.
Yeah. So you do look at games, but you know, you look at games that you should have won, but. Normally, I can't remember in April, so it's more in June or July or August. You're looking at games that, you know, boy, that game right there, we should have won that game. It got away from us, and it could cost us. Or look where we're at now. We're one game out if we would have won those two games. Yeah, so you definitely do that. Yeah.
Sure. Boy, what a great, great beginning for us, Will. Very good. You're on it today.
Well, it's good
to
be back.
He's always on it. What do you mean today?
Well, it's true. You're always on it, but today, for the first game at home, you walked in here with some coffee for everybody, and you just were ready to work right away.
I'm well rested.
He's got fresh legs.
Fresh legs.
Yeah.
I like the early Saturday and Sunday games. I like that.
Yeah, you know,
this is good for me.
Yeah, I do too.
Midnight, being here midnight and coming back at 8 a.m. is not good.
Sure. Well, even the start times now, right? We start at 6:45 opposed to 7:15.
Right.
Does everybody enjoy that better?
We'll find out this week.
Okay.
Yeah, last question for you. The Padres are coming in. Learn anything about the Padres in those first four games?
Well, yeah, they're you know, they believe in themselves. I can see that. There was a whole different vibe around that team. Of course, it's opening day, and they're excited. They, you know, they signed Machado. The young guy Tatis is there. They're position wise, they're very talented. They have power. They have speed. There's a lot of ways that they can beat you. You know, the pitchers did a good job against us. How good their pitching staff is going to be is still up in the air for me. I mean, you know, they dominated us there early, and I'm not quite sure that they're going to do that. But it's a much improved team, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, look, the Tatis kid looks very talented, but this is the big leagues, and we'll find out as the season goes along when teams get to know his weaknesses better, you know, and they start attacking that weakness. Will he be able to make the adjustment? Will he be able to hold his own? Now, the answer is probably yes, or the Padres probably wouldn't have run him up here at 20 years old. They believe in him. Yeah. But those things still remain to be seen, right? You can't judge it from just a few games. So we'll see how it goes. It's a long season.
Good series.
Allie and I were talking about.
Yeah, good series, though. This is a good series coming up, and I'm glad to finish this one off today. Hey, great to have you here.
Good being here.
All right.
You guys have a great afternoon, and we'll see you next week.
Hope to see you moving down the line.
Yeah, you're moving very well.
Yeah.
Moving well.
Thank you. That's good. We put a lot of work in there.
Moving well.
I don't want to get hit with a foul ball, so I need to keep my quickness.
All right. That is the third base coach, Ron Wotus, of the Giants.